listening to CFAC 960 AM, Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Live from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Owned and operated by Rogers Media. Also streaming at sportsnet.ca/960. On the NHL beat, it's the big show. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
One day ago, officially announced the Calgary Flames locking up their captain for the next 6 years at an average annual salary of $6.75 million. We were fortunate enough to hear from Brad Treliving, the GM of the Flames, yesterday. We were fortunate enough to hear from Mark Giordano himself. Both of those interviews available on demand on our website. Earlier today, Bruce spent a little time with the agent for Mr. Giordano, one Rich Winter.
Seen him negotiate deals, many deals over the years. I don't think anyone more important, at least contract-wise, to the City of Calgary and the Flames fans than the one that was announced yesterday. And I'm joined by Rich Winter to talk a little bit about it. How you doing, Rich?
I'm off. Really doing well, Bruce. You?
Well, you have to live in Edmonton, but otherwise you're okay, right?
Oh, but I live on the River Valley. It's beautiful. I watch canoes come by every way, and I think to myself, how brown it is in Calgary.
It isn't brown this year, actually.
My daughter moved there. I've been there quite a bit because of that. And it's beautiful this year. Really nice.
How green is our valley. All right. Try to give me the two-sentence story about this contract. What it was like from you and Gio's point of view.
You mean getting Brad to call us back on time or the meat and potatoes?
Well, you've already told us one thing. Are you telling us?
Oh, I hope he's listening, actually. Brad's a really good guy. I think it was just a lot of struggle around term. I mean, it became an interesting dynamic as the Canadian dollar kept falling, and it really changed the whole, really a lot of the dynamics around the negotiations. I think July 1st had a little bit of an impact as we saw older players really not getting the term that they used to. And I think it's created a growing concern with older players that, you look around at some of these other teams with these contracts going into 39, 40 and beyond. I think teams are starting to get increasingly nervous because the cap's not doing what they expected it to, or it doesn't look like it will. So it doesn't look like there's going to be any room for errors in judgment. And so those dynamics just made it interesting and different and difficult. I think the term was really challenging for the Flames to get to where we ended up. Gio didn't want to push much beyond that because just by his nature, he would never want to be in a situation where he was being paid to do something he was no longer capable of. So he was quite content with 6 years, even though other players may have pushed for a little longer. So it took them a while to get there. And then there was the normal tugging back and forth on the numbers. But we got that managed, at least over time. Which was the biggest one?
You mentioned the July 1st and some of the veteran contracts. What were a couple of those ones that raised the red flag for you?
Well, I don't think it was a particular one. Just the fact that this just was no term out there this year, So it was really just an overwhelming feeling. And I talked to a couple of other agents over the course of this negotiation, and they found that to be a tough struggle. J.P. Barrie was talking about the Sedin's deals in Vancouver, and so I talked with JP and some other people, and term is the battlefield now, and I think rightly so, because you've got to be very careful in this sort of cap world, especially now that it's leveling off. You can't have two 38-year-old players underperforming and making big money or having large cap hits.
Yeah, I think people feel when they hear about negotiations, they think it's just you and the player talking to the organization, but both sides are canvassing the whole industry and talking to people in the industry as this is going on, and sometimes talking to people in the financial industry as well, I presume, to predict where you think the dollars are going.
Well, I think sometimes it's just by osmosis. I ran into JP at the, at the Hockey Canada tryouts. It just happened. You talk to people, and so it's not, seek out a little bit. But, yeah, you're just trying to figure it out. I mean, the Canadian dollar is one. It's a lot of people, we're looking at China and looking at China's decreased demand and how that affects our economy and making at least some educated guesses on how that might affect Gio. But, as the dollar dropped, the compensation to Geo in Canadian dollars was growing. So that also had an impact on in his decision. Ultimately,
explain what that meant. What you meant there, Rich?
Well, see, because when we started negotiation, you know, $6.5 million or $7 million U.S. was about 7 million Canadian, a little bit more. When we finished negotiating, you know, 6.75 U.S. was close to 9 million Canadian. So it had a huge impact. I mean, he is Canadian. He has no plans to live outside Canada. So without any assistance from the Flames, compensation continued to rise in Canadian dollars incredibly over the course of this negotiation. So that had an impact on the ultimate number because 6.75 wasn't the 6.75 we were talking about when we first started.
You have handled many players over the years. I've known a bunch of your clients, guys, different types, different personalities. Tell me what was unique about working with Gio.
Well, he's really a smart guy, and he really understands what he wants. We do goal setting with our players, and a lot of people, I don't know if a lot of agents do it to the detail that we do it, but I really talk a lot to the players about where do you want to live, what are your concerns about taxes, family, team, your role in the team, your relationship with the organization. And so I think as we went through this, Gio had a really firm commitment to the Calgary Flames that was really buoyed up in a deep understanding of what was important to him. So he went into this negotiation knowing that it was going to be very difficult for another team to beat the Calgary Flames in a negotiation. Sure, could he have got more money? Brad mentioned that in some of his interviews yesterday, and that ended up in newspapers, you know, that, yeah, Gio could have got a lot more, probably. But where? Not from a team that he's the captain of. I mean, he was really close to, he really wanted to lead this team. He's really feeling they're at the, you know, at the crossroads of something special. And, you know, Gio wanted to be in Calgary. He wanted to be their leader. And I think what was really different, money is it was important as part of this negotiation, but Gio was so concerned about how this would affect his team and their competitiveness. He is the captain of the Calgary Flames, and he wears that C with a great deal of pride and a great deal of responsibility. And that's not the norm anymore. You know, guys get to be 34 and they just exit and go somewhere else, or 33. Or Gio really wanted to be here, and it was sincere, and it weighed in on every single day of these negotiations, but I want to be here. And, of course, we didn't tell them that much, but that often, but it really was different. It was just his loyalty to an organization that he'd grown up in was unique.
Talking with Rich Winter, who was the agent for Mark Giordano in these negotiations. You're still working with Claude Lemieux, right?
Yes.
Okay. Handled lots of players, as I say. I've known him going back to the 1980s, I guess. Late 80s, early 90s.
Oh, no, that couldn't be true. I think I was in elementary school then.
No, well, you were a boy prodigy. That is true. I was quite amazed that an 11-year-old child was handling players' contract negotiations at the time. But, yes, you are a young guy.
Yeah. Al Burton, growing up in Drumheller. It's the way we all are.
What makes the Flames different to negotiate with? Or unique, I should say, not different. Well, what's unique about negotiating with the Calgary Flames?
That unique, but I do think that, you know, Brad brings a, you know, he brings a much broader perspective. He's got a plan. I don't know every single aspect of it. Much of it he shares with me, but he has a very clear vision, and he isn't about to deviate from it. I don't always agree with him, obviously, but he has a job to do that's different than mine, and I think the Flames organization has become very professional. With Brian there, with his experience, and Brad, I mean, that's one of the more talented hockey operations in the business. I mean, Brad grew up in the Central Hockey League, which he had an ownership interest in. He's built arenas. He's overseen teams. He's overseen multiple teams. You know, he's been in a very difficult situation in Phoenix trying to build a team and manage a payroll. So he brings a lot of experience to the table, and of course Brian's experience really speaks for itself. So the combination is, you know, it's just refreshing. I'd rather deal with a group that is that clear on where they're headed. They're not wandering here and there and wishy-washy, and I've even seen it in some of the entry-level contracts that we've negotiated in the last year. They're just very consistent on the way that they operate, which is helpful because You know, if you're consistent in entry level, you don't get embarrassed by your third-round pick getting less than the fourth-round pick. And they've really worked hard to bring a level of professionalism that is not unique. I mean, there's a lot of teams, Chicago and Detroit, and a lot of them have run very professionally now. But the level of professionalism over the course of the last couple, 3 years has advanced considerably.
It's interesting you mention that because Rob Kerr and I talk all the time. I said years ago when we finally got the salary cap, I said, look, teams that make a ton of money are going to have money left over and they're going to start spending it in other places. And one of the places I thought they would do this is in management and in training, et cetera. And one of the templates we're seeing now, Rich, is, and you just talked about it with the Flames, we're not just seeing one GM, we're almost seeing a college of people in an organization, a brain trust. Yeah, the GM's there, but there's a president, then there's advisors, et cetera. We're seeing this in place after place after place. Again, how is that changing your business? Because you're still kind of operating just you and the player, right?
Well, no, we have a team of people that we rely on for financial management and some other things. But I think what's interesting, I think where it hit me, though, you know, Chicago was really the first organization to do this as broadly and effectively as it's now starting to be emulated by other teams. But I remember when Marian Hossa first signed there, he had a bad shoulder, you know, after signing a 12-year deal. They were aware of it.
Your client.
Yeah, my client, Marian Hossa. And so we sat in a meeting around their convention where 12 people were in the meeting in a suite at the hotel room where the convention was held. And I just thought, it just hit me as fascinating that they had two doctors, they had the president, they had the GM, two assistant GMs. And as a group, they're making less mistakes than they would otherwise. There's a lot more, you know, the old Chicago Blackhawks was Bob Pulford and Cindy the secretary, and they're running more like a corporation. They're less prone to make mistakes. They're less prone to responding emotionally. It's really been interesting. I find it refreshing because I think capable groups of people are easier to deal with.
Yeah,
because they're more consistent. They understand the arguments you're making, and you get to closure more quickly.
Is this going to make it more difficult for teams that operate on a lower budget that aren't cap teams that maybe can't afford to do this sort of stuff? Are we going to start seeing the better heeled teams having an advantage this way?
Well, I think it's going to be huge because it's really difficult for these teams to compete. I mean, you know, we've seen, you know, at the combine, we've seen teams, low budget teams, I won't name them in particular to pick on them, but would send one scout to the combine. You know, I mean, that can't be an advantage.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to be challenging, and I think the cap, a lot of people, it's not just in this area, Bruce, because there is a huge competitive advantage certain cities have over others. I mean, whether people in would like it or not, Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, those are attractive destinations as compared to some other cities, and I would even, you know, mine included, where I live, and Calgary probably, where I've also lived. I mean, I don't think if you're a young 24, 25-year-old young man or 27-year-old unrestricted free agent, you're going to be attracted, you and your wife are going to be attracted to Calgary and Edmonton as easily as you're going to be attracted to a Chicago or Los Angeles.
Right. Talking with Rich Winter, the agent for Mark Giordano, agent for a lot of well-known hockey players. Let's get back to where we started off in terms of how the market has changed. You made a point there about the Flames having the advantage with the difference in the Canadian dollar. Now, who knows? Currencies go up and go down, but typically I don't see this changing much for 2 years. Do we see Canadian teams having an advantage here to be signing guys at a dollar figure that's lower in American but still gives them a really nice take-home in Canada?
No, I think it depends on the player. Gio is Canadian, plans to live in Canada, so I think it's a huge advantage. Would it be an advantage for, you know, if you're negotiating with Phil Kessel or, Patrick Kane or one of these un-Americans? Probably not. But I think it does give you an advantage. You just can't help but realize what you're getting in local currency where you're planning to live.
Yeah. Plus, I think we've talked about this before, too. Alberta still, you know, has some drawbacks, perhaps, but the tax structure here is very good for athletes, isn't it?
Yeah, it's attractive. And I do think there's different types of players. Like, a lot of players pine for the opportunity to play in an environment where, I remember when Peter Sikora came here having played in New Jersey and won two cups and then played in Anaheim and went to the finals. But when he came to Edmonton, he said he couldn't tell you the number of times he's gassing up and someone's going, hey, Pete, good luck tonight. And so there are players that really enjoy being in our environment where hockey is really at the heart of almost everything we do from a sports and entertainment perspective. So, yeah, I don't think we're as challenged as people think, but we're challenged. Certain players don't like the limelight, and I think the Montreals, the Calgarys, the Edmontons, the Canadian teams are not as attractive to those teams. I don't think it's as much the weather and things that people would traditionally think. It's just some people don't like the limelight. They like to go to work and they like to go to the beach.
So as I said, when we were just getting on the phone, I was just making the remarks that, of course, as soon as Gio's contract was made, everyone started to talk about Sean Monahan, what's going to happen, et cetera. We're heading into a new climate, as you just described. Give us your sort of, you know, back of the envelope notes on what you see going forward now. What are we looking at the next 18 months to 2 years that might influence you going shorter term or longer term or whatever? Just give us your sort of back of the envelope assessment of where the market is going to go.
Well, I just think, it's really hard to pinpoint generalities, but I think outside of, you're going to struggle to get term with older players. I think you're going to want to go shorter term. I mean, I don't think this economy can be in the toilet for a long time. But, you know, we're hearing things from Alberta's perspective with the reduced cost of solar energy coming on board and the lack of demand in places like China. I mean, it's going to be tough for a long time. So I think, you're going to see a lot of struggle. A lot of agents are going to want to get those long-term deals that they have been getting for the younger players. They're not coming. I think you're going to have to make real educated decisions on what you have as a player. And if you have a rising asset like a Johnny Gaudreau or Sean Monahan or Freddie Anderson or Hampus Lindholm, who I represent in Anaheim, you're going to have to be real careful to lock in for too long, because what you're going to lock in for is it's going to be a lot tougher.
Yeah.
To get the numbers that they have been getting. And that adjustment's going to be hard for young players to accept, because they're going to look at a guy. I talked to Stan Bowman about this a couple days ago, and about the 10.5 he's got tied up in Kane and Taze. But he said, Rich, you have to look at what the environment was when we signed those deals. Those guys thought they were 12 or 13. We just signed that big television contract in Canada, where projections were the cap was going to 80. So they were making decisions at that time with a different set of expectations. And so what young players are going to face now is they're not going to get those deals, and there's going to be a sense of envy and jealousy in some cases, and it's going to take some time for people to accept that there's going to be a correction in the market, and won't be necessarily the case with the really good young players, but it's going to be tough on all of us, because we're not going to get the deals in some cases that guys got last year.
As always, Rich, a fount of information, lots of great stuff in there for the fans to digest, and because we all have to be economists now going forward. If we're fans of a team, we've got to understand where it's going. Lots of good stuff in there for us. I appreciate you taking the time today, and hopefully you'll come down to Calgary. Hey, maybe we'll do a book together.
I would love to do that, Bruce. You know how much affection I have for you. I've known for you for a long time, and I'm glad you're close to home rather than in Toronto. It's good that you're out here, and we'll see you soon, I hope.
Anytime, come on down. Thanks very much, Rich.
Thanks, Bruce.
Well, he had me up until his affection for Bruce. I was invested. I was right there. You got me. Another thing that sounds like I'm making a joke, and I really don't mean it, but not a lot of hockey conversations that you hear these days or hockey people that reference Alberta switching to solar power and the Chinese economy.
Yes.
And I don't say that for effect. I say that's that's the kind of conversation you get out of Rich, and that was different. I enjoyed it. How his approach. I thought that was really, that was curtain, you jerking the curtain back a little bit and seeing behind, of what goes into it. Because there's always that, that Bugs Bunny feel to, we want 9, we want 4, we want 8.5, we want 4.5, right. You know what I mean, in negotiations? Yeah. Whereas, he talks about how this particular negotiation for the captain of the Calgary Flames really changed dramatically with the drop of the Canadian dollar.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And when he presents it and you understand it and you get it and you go, okay, yeah, that makes sense. Mm. And maybe I just take things too simplistically, Bruce, but to listen to him and the way you guys navigated that whole conversation, I have a much better appreciation for, kind of the process today than I did even 15 minutes ago. Just that sense of, okay, well, sometimes we think it's just as simple as here's my piece of paper. Well, how about this piece of paper? Yeah. There's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah, and I think that to the credit of the Flames organization, that Brad Treliving gave us a pretty good overview from his point. I think he told us most of what we needed to know. There's things he has to hold back because,
sure,
you know, as someone once said, well, you're an agent and you only have to worry about one guy, whereas you're a GM, you have to worry about 20 guys or right. 25 guys and, right. and their contracts and their agents and their egos, et cetera. So you can't give away the story. You can't let them know too much. The takeaways from that, as I say, the thought were interesting is the thing about walking into the Chicago Blackhawks to negotiate and 10 guys being there.
Yep.
The stuff about the Canadian dollar and how that changed, swung things, I thought was really kind of eye-opening and an insight for our listeners. And because our listeners now have had to become experts on salary caps just so they know what's going to happen with their favorite team.
Yep.
And now we've got a little bit, okay, well, you know, maybe there's an advantage there. If we've got a Canadian guy who wants to stay in the Canadian mm-hmm. city, we can maybe do some deals that way.
Yeah, Rich was very upfront about, you know, you talked about selling a Canadian market to, you know, to players. I'm always fascinated by that conversation. It really struck me when the Flames hired Mike Keenan, and Mike Keenan, you know, kept saying, boy, it's an honor to coach in a Canadian marketplace. You got to relish this. And I really felt towards the end, you know, Mike didn't like being in a Canadian marketplace, whereas, you know, heard almost the same thing from Bob Hartley. Yeah. And yet Bob Hartley, every opportunity, hammers home the dome, the Red Mile, our fans, you know, my Jack Adams, I want to donate.
Mike's
to
team
coaches.
Wasn't playing very well too.
No, it's all situational, Bruce, but that, and that's what I'm saying about playing in a Canadian marketplace. Mm. You, when it's going well, it's awesome. But how much fun? I mean, let's be perfectly honest. We can all have our opinion, but Phil Kessel going to get a hot dog and that becoming this giant story. Mm-hmm. You don't think players are kind of paying attention to that, going, I really want to be part of that?
Well, and as he pointed, different players are different.
Absolutely.
And a guy like Gio is so grounded, he can handle it.
Yeah.
And he is so much not about the glam and the glitter. But there's a lot of guys who want to live the Hollywood lifestyle. They're looking at Dion Phaneuf marrying a Hollywood star. They're looking at somebody dating Hillary Duff or marrying Hillary Duff. I don't know if that's still going or not. I have to figure that out. But anyhow, they look at that and they say, yeah, that's for me. You know, I'd like that. And I can't do that playing in Winnipeg or Calgary or Edmonton. So, you know, take me to L.A. or take me to Chicago or one of those cities.
Well, it was, I think, the comment he made, and some guys just want to live close to the beach and wear shorts and flip-flops. I always remember when when Scott Niedermeyer left the New Jersey Devils, the Calgary Flames, the Vancouver Canucks, the Edmonton Oilers all had a run at him.
Yep.
And he
chose. What did he say?
He chose Anaheim.
And why did he say Anaheim?
Because I want to leave the rink and leave the game.
Be anonymous.
Be anonymous.
Be a stranger.
Hey, he's honest about it. I'm not going to criticize him. Yeah. Different, you know, your line of different, you know, different holes for different core, different clubs for different courses or whatever.
Horses for courses, sorry.
Different, you know, I just assumed it was a golf
pegs
analogy.
For holes, square,
but
round.
But you know
hole,
what I mean? Yeah. It takes different things to go around. But Rich has always been one of those guys, because I think Rich was also a guy when the Canadian teams were crying poor, and help me out with this because I don't want to misrepresent him, but he was also one of the first guys to come out and say, well, look at the tax issue. You know, in Alberta, the tax is pretty good, right?
He did mention that. Yep.
You know, and things like that, that, you know, he was also a guy that would go counterculture, if you will, and call, you know, shenanigans on a few things at times.
Well, it's good that there are guys who grew up in places like Drumheller and some smaller Canadian cities that are involved in that decision making. It's no surprise. A lot of these guys moved to Hollywood. A lot of these guys moved to the agents. I mean, moved to big cities so that when their kids come into town, they can impress them.
Yep.
You know, for CAA, you know, Pat... the agent, all of a sudden, I forgot his last name, Pat. Anyhow, Pat
Brisson.
Pat Brisson, he's based in Hollywood. And the young guy comes in, and it's CAA, and you go to their offices, and there's pictures of Tom Cruise on the wall, et cetera.
Sure.
I mean, that's a particular experience. Now, J.P. Barry, who's his partner, lives in Kelowna, and much, you know, he ain't doing the glam thing.
Nope.
But different guys, different attitudes. And absolutely. Again, if you're coming out of junior hockey, and you've been riding a bus for 3 years, and there's a potential for all of a sudden, you know, to be dating somebody who's been in the movies.
Yeah.
You know, that appeals to some guys.
It sure does.
Well, not just some guys, a lot of guys.
A lot of guys. We'll take a break when we come back. Bruce writing a column that talked about a little bit in the last couple of hours. We'll get into it. We'll get him to defend. We'll get him to explain. He's got some explaining to do. He wrote a column, top 10 sporting moments in Calgary sports history. Top 10 sporting moments in Calgary sports history. Coming up in the 4 o'clock hour, we'll bring you some headlines. Rob Volman from Hockey Abstract, he will join us at 4:45. We'll talk to him about the Mark Giordano contract, a couple other contracts that have been signed. He also wrote a column for the impact of coaches for ESPN. We'll get into that. Am I interrupting you guys? No, I know, but I'm trying to work here. Holy cow. No,
I'm prepping your show.
Oh, I see.
I'm asking the gentleman in the other room if he has some audio to make this show even more seamless and entertaining.
Why would we start now?
Apparently he doesn't. So
okay,
yeah,
so we're good.
Don't you worry about Lanny.
Oh, is that what you're here to do?
Yeah.
Oh. See? Gotta go tell him Lanny sent you.
Well, seriously, if you don't go to Eastside Dodge, don't go, for gosh sake.
There you are.
That's a commercial.
My favorite part, as I said to him earlier, my favorite part of that was Lanny says, I got to go do this prep stuff. So I figured maybe an hour, 90 minutes later, we'd see him leaving. Mm. He was out of the building in like 2 minutes.
He was on the air longer with us
yes.
than he did to go upstairs, record his Eastside Dodge commercial, and leave.
Did you ever, there was an SCTV skit years ago, and I think it was Rick Moranis was doing Mike McDonald from the Doobie Brothers, who was on all sorts of music for a while.
Yep.
And the skit was about him driving from studio to studio, racing from studio to studio to get there. And so when Lanny came in and was there for 5 minutes and just put down his voice, you know.
Yeah, Michael McDonald.
Because I got such a long way to go.
Exactly.
And then boom, then he's to the next studio,
the
right?
next one. He's on,
that's
every,
what it
he's
me.
On everybody's
that's
album.
Right.
He's on everybody's album. Coming up tomorrow morning, 7 to 8. The first of a series of Sportsnet 960 town halls on Calgary next. We will have the president of the Calgary Sports and Entertainment Corporation, Ken King. Ken King and I taking your phone calls 7 to 8 a.m. tomorrow on Calgary next. We are scheduled to do it as well next week in the afternoon, but our first tomorrow morning from 7 to 8 right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Talk to your boss. It's totally okay to stream Sportsnet 960 all day and night on your work computer. In fact, it's new company policy. Sportsnet.ca/960. The Big Show, brought to you by Comedy Cave. If it's comedy you crave, come to the Cave. Tickets are always $10. Comedy's so good you'll whip out your funny bone. Go to ComedyCave.com. Calgary, the boys on the Big Show are talking sports right now. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
There's usually a team dinner involved. They happen quite a bit. You know, it'll be fun, and you know, he's a generous guy. I think hopefully we get a couple dinners out of him.
Matt Stajan, captain's on the hook, Bruce. Got a new deal. Just heard from the agent.
He's
not
buying.
Sure. Did you ask Rich Winter about Mark Giordano and the fact that he'll have to buy some team dinners?
I presume that
there it goes. Just, you know, here you're counting, you're doing your
see,
budget.
Now, I wouldn't put it past Gio. He's so frugal.
Yeah.
He knows that Rich is a Mormon and he wouldn't have to buy him champagne or anything to celebrate.
Right.
So it'd be, send Rich a couple of Cokes or something or whatever.
That doesn't seem right. That's not the Giordano.
Saving on the bottom line.
I don't know if frugal is ever a word I would apply to Mark Giordano.
He knows the guys on the team are going to soak him, so. Go easy on Rich.
If you go to our website, you are going to find right there on the main page, smack dab right there, a Bruce Dobigan column, as he says, to mark the return of I Don't Like Mondays.
Yeah.
Which I'm really ecstatic about. I mean, I love this piece, but I'm just happy you're going to be back writing.
I'm halfway through writing that new one for next
week. I haven't
been
writing, but you know.
I got another one I started working on last night.
But is it going to be like this all the time?
It's about Calgary next.
Oh, okay.
Well, that'll start, and then we'll put a few things at the bottom line.
Right, yeah, okay.
Can they not fire Rob Kerr now?
That's right.
That
should be every week. Yeah. Days like today, I'm right there with you. By the way, it is a simple article, according to Bruce.
Simple premise.
Your list of the greatest moments in Calgary sports history. Simple.
Top 10.
We go all the way back to number 10.
Drum roll. Love the production values on this show.
Oh, there's no production values. We talked about it a
little bit. Already got 1 foot in Vegas.
A little bit earlier. This is Theo Fleury scoring up in Edmonton Game 6 in 1991 against the Edmonton Oilers, an overtime goal, as you mentioned, tape-to-tape pass from Mark Messier. Beat Grant Fuhr.
Right on the tape.
He's right there. Wide open.
Why didn't they show that tape when Mess went into the Hall of Fame? Why didn't they show that?
Well, I'm assuming they just had to edit it a little bit because of the time constraints. I'm sure it was kind of the tail end of it, right? Theo would score, and then as we know, he would go spinning across the ice in one of the most memorable celebrations you'll see in the NHL.
Has there ever been one like that since? I don't think so. There's been celebrations, but in the NHL, there's been guys doing some stuff. Tiger Williams used to ride the stick.
Sure. Remember Alexi Yashin? I think when he hit 50, he pretended it was hot, it was on fire and things like that. Got into a lot of trouble for that.
But it was he put his hands on the
but
stick.
But to me, this was in enemy territory. This was the proverbial middle finger to all Oiler fans, don't
it
you
was.
Think?
It was, rather. And you had to remember that it was, yes, exactly. It was at the Northlands Coliseum.
Yeah.
So called at the time.
Yeah, the Game 7 didn't work out. But that's neither here nor there. This was the moment. This was Game 6.
Yeah.
That is your top 10 moment. Number 10 moment. Sorry, that's the 10.
The 10th.
Okay, as we work chronologically backwards.
Yes, sir.
Number 9, Kyle Schufelt wins gold men's floor exercise in 2004 in Athens. The first medal ever by a Canadian in artistic gymnastics. The first Canadian gold of the 2004 Olympics. So here's a Calgary guy that does something that has never been done before on the international stage. Not in Calgary, as we were talking about before. That's not what this is. This is
Calgarians or
Calgary moments. And here's Kyle Schufelt doing something that hadn't been done.
Well, it was a sport in which Canada had no history, but the best part, the backstory is the best part. This guy hurt his ankle in March of that year, and everyone thought he was finished. They thought there was no way he could get there. Yep. He really seriously hurt his ankle, and they thought, well, if he does get in, he'll never make it. Because you've seen guys do floor exercises.
Oh, yeah.
The tumbling and stuff.
Yeah.
Not only did he make it, but he won the gold medal. And then he came and followed that up with a bronze a little later that year. So it wasn't just a one-horse wonder thing for him. His body started to break down a little bit after that, and it's a tough, tough sport on bodies.
For sure. And I believe Kyle's still in the city and continues to get back to the sport.
And gymnastics and all that sort of stuff. So.
Number 8, Calgary's Ken Reid becomes the first North American male to win a downhill World Cup. It happened in France, December 7th of 1975. And that really kind of gets us going on the era of the crazy Canucks. Another one where I'm like, Ken Reid. Oh, no, Calgary's Ken Reid. This did not happen in Calgary, but it's a Calgarian who impacted sport in our country.
Yes, and with the crazy Canucks, Dave Irwin, Dave Murray, and later Steve Podborski, and I guess towards the end they had a couple of other guys who kind of joined towards the end, but they made it a must-see thing in Canada. They made a film about it later on. There was an interesting dynamic. There was the moment in which Reid was the favorite in the downhill in 1980, and he got about 10 seconds out of the starting gate, and his binding released. How that ever happened, I still think that the Soviets did something to his binding.
Some shenanigans?
He was the favorite.
Right.
He was the favorite. Anyhow, in any event, it was the start of a long period of really great success, and a Calgarian who basically, he manned up and said, I'm going to be the one to do it.
This is the first of a couple that I have a problem with. Stuck at number 7 is arguably the greatest goal ever scored by a player on his own bench, not paying attention to the play. Oiler rookie defenseman in 1986, Steve Smith, gave the Flames a playoff series win over the Oilers. He banked the puck in off of Grant Fuhr. Perry Barazan, hockey legend. Perry Barazan, I was with him over the weekend. Yep. He regaled kids with the story of this goal. He was credited with this goal. Calgary would go on to the Stanley Cup final and eventually lose to Patrick Waugh and the Montreal Canadiens. But that goal, that moment, again, one that takes place in Edmonton, not here in Calgary, but is certainly
it was their first big win against the Oilers.
Absolutely.
The Oilers were destined, like the Canadians and the Islanders, they were destined for a long string of consecutive cups. And not only did the Flames beat the Oilers, but they broke that streak. I said earlier about the effect on Grant Fuhr. Steve Smith was devastated by it, et cetera. And it was you know, there's no truth to the rumor, by the way. He was on the bench, but there was no truth to the rumor. He's looking up at the stands and saying, Marie, where do you want to go for dinner after?
Right, right.
Apparently,
no. He wasn't calling a shot.
It didn't go that far.
No.
But it was close.
Yeah,
it was close.
Yeah.
So it's a great moment, and anything to do with, you know, breaking the Oilers, I think, is always good news for Calgary.
Right. Number 6, Jerry Keeling and the Stampeders win the Grey Cup in 1971, the first cup since 1948
over Toronto.
Calgary wins 14-11. Controversial punt attempt by Calgary's Harry Aboffs in the final minute seals the win over the highly favored Argos. So a underdog, plucky Stampeders team wins the Grey Cup.
And in an era where the Stamps were it in this town. The hockey was...
Not here yet.
No. And whatever hockey there was nice, but it wasn't that great. It was a huge moment, and they'd waited a long time since 48 to get it back. And in the same way that the Grant Fuhr mm-hmm. goal is to Edmonton, the Leon McQuaid fumble in Toronto was for Torontonians for decades one of the single moments about we can't catch a break. It's just terrible. And they replay it, and of course they make the point that maybe he didn't fumble, maybe the ground made it fumble,
right.
et cetera.
Now, for our younger generation, one of the ones that they will have probably some pretty firsthand knowledge of.
You kids out there.
Well, I shouldn't say that. Kyle Shufelt was
just
in
before
that
we have the yeah. introduce the world's largest nun here on the stage, Topo Gigio for you young folks.
Number five. I don't think they need a puppet mouse. After 7 years outside the playoffs and without a postseason series win since 1989, Calgary rebounds under Daryl Sutter. Marty Gelinas scores the overtime game 7 in Vancouver, giving the Flames an opening round victory. They'd eventually go all the way to the Stanley Cup final, but the moment you're talking about is Marty Gelinas beating the Vancouver Canucks, his first elimination goal of that playoff run.
First of three.
The first
Actually,
of three.
First of four, to be honest.
In fairness, yeah. Yeah, if you're counting at home.
Yeah, you can.
Off the boards. Here's Yellow shot. All big. Another huge. The score. A rebound. And it's Martin Gelinas, the former Canuck of the Calgary Flames, will end the cup curse and move on to Detroit in round.
Just the same, the last.
I always remember I was on the in the press box, literally on the goal line.
Right.
I had the access and could yeah. see down there. And I turned to my friend George Johnson. I said, "What do we do now? Because none of us were expecting to do anything. We figured one playoff series, we could
yeah,
go home."
Yeah, yeah. I'll never forget. We were at Shanks on McLeod Trail South, and it was jammed to the rafters. And Calgary's up, and the net is empty, and all of a sudden there's a hoodie on the ice, and the next thing you know, Jerome McGinley sprawled out. He backed over a stick.
Yep.
And then Matt Cook ties it. And our good friend Joe Sports just hated that shot of Ed Jovanovski and the
jumping up and down.
And I just remember being at Shanks, and it was as if everybody was sedated at the exact same moment. There was a handful of Canucks fans, so they were digging it. But then that, you know, they go to the intermission, right?
Yep.
And woe is us. Like, why didn't they call the why didn't they call the sweatshirt? Why didn't they call the stick? How did this happen? How did that? And it was just all of these reasons why. And almost forgetting that the Flames started on the power play. And it was over so quick, Bruce.
Yeah.
And there was.
But it wasn't over until the Canucks had a golden mint chance.
And was it
Cook again? I can't remember who
right,
it was. To the
right.
side of the net.
Yeah.
Golden chance. And Mika Kiprusoff. I mean, that's just solidified or started his
yeah.
playoff run of miracles. And he made that miracle save,
right.
went to the other end, and they left
and
Marty
they, and
to
they
the
batted
side of the
in.
Net.
Yeah. And the rest, as they say, is history. And personally, for myself, I know about 4.5 hours later, Craig Conroy called in the middle of the night. And
yes,
the most listened to live phone call at 2:30 in the morning in Calgary history. And it was so special. So that's number five.
Yes,
that game against Vancouver, that win against Vancouver in 2004.
Could be higher for some people.
Right.
Could be right at the top for some people.
Number four, the Calgary Stampeders win the 1948 Grey Cup, their first CFL title. this is the part I like. Now, the game's one thing, but what really solidified it for you was the start of the traditions that Calgarians
yeah.
would bring to the Grey Cup, right?
We taught the Grey Cup Western hospitality. So they took
right.
the horses into Toronto
yep.
in the old Royal York Hotel, and they did the whole cowboy thing there. And they said, you know, from now on, because the game was always played in Toronto because the weather was milder,
right.
played Varsity
right.
Stadium.
Yep.
And people from Calgary said, to heck with this. We're going to bring Calgary to Toronto. And they did. And that tradition started. And I think it made the modern Grey Cup what it is today.
Number three. The Atlanta Flames are purchased for a then-record $16 million U.S. by Nelson Skalbania, brought to the city of Calgary. There was a consortium of Calgary owners, including Harley Hotchkiss, Ralph Schofield, Norm Green, the Seaman brothers. They played in the Corral until 1983. They played in the Corral, which to this day, did you ever see a game in the Corral?
I never did.
I did.
On TV.
My first Flames game was Calgary versus the New York Islanders. And funny enough, that game also happened to be Brent Sutter's first NHL game. He played there. And it was the big leagues. Yeah. It was the NHL. It was jam-packed. We were in standing room only tickets, and people were outside smoking and all of those things, and or inside smoking and all of those things, yeah. and the high boards and the benches and everything.
The double bench.
Right? And, you know, nobody gave a second thought. Yeah, the building's coming. Don't worry about it. We're in the corral. And every time the Flames practice over there, I go and I sit in absolute amazement yeah. that they played seasons in there.
It was stunning to watch. Now, on TV, you couldn't really see that it wasn't that big. On TV, it looked like the other rink
sure.
because you're only looking at that.
Sure.
But the fact, well, and that's, people want to know the difference between the NHL then and now. The fact that the NHL would allow a team to play
yes.
in a rink
yes.
with 7,700 seats
yes.
Like that and pictures of the rodeo on the wall, that tells you where the NHL was at in those days.
So that is number three. It's the purchasing of the Atlanta Flames, right?
Yes, sir.
That's okay. Number two. The Olympics that opened February 13th of 1988, many today to this day still consider them the most successful Olympics. There you go. Eh? This song, Petro-Canada Blue Jackets. Those are the things that the Sun Ice Blue Jackets with the logo on them. Those are the things that I take away.
Eddie the Eagle. Now, was that the Cool Runnings Olympics, too, with the Jamaica
yes,
bobsled team?
Yes, it sure was, yeah.
yeah. There was a lot. There's hardly the only
Elizabeth
bad
Manley.
Story. Yeah.
Right?
Manley, yes, but I like her, too. The only bad part of the Olympics, of course, was, you remember, there was a Chinook, and there was hardly any. They were trucking snow in.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit difficult, but they left a legacy behind, and we were just talking about the same thing about the Flames. And the can-do spirit of the people saying, let's bring the Flames here into this stupid little small building, etc.
Right.
Frank King and the people behind COTA, I mean, that was their dream, was to bring it to this city. Nobody, Calgary, Innsbruck. Let's talk about European cities. And that's the Calgary spirit.
And I said it before, Bruce, we were only 12 years removed from the disaster, the financial disaster, right. not necessarily the event, but the financial disaster that took over the city of Montreal with the 76 Summer Games, right? That had a bad taste in people's mouths, you know?
Oh,
the Olympics weren't about being profitable.
Yeah,
the
someone
Olympics
who was
weren't,
from Montreal yeah. and saw all that sort of stuff. And, I mean, you know, we're a little disappointing for the Calgary Olympics. And in the Montreal Olympics, we had the East German women, the bearded ladies. They did by that point. I think they'd sort of caught up with the steroids enough. We didn't have that spectacle.
Right. Okay.
But anyway, it was a great event for Canada, and I think it was significant for the West in the sense of, you know what? Hey, look at us. We can do this.
Yeah, don't you think that most people would have recognized, you know, internationally Canada, they would have thought probably mm-hmm. primarily of Montreal and Toronto,
yep.
and maybe a little bit of Vancouver.
Yeah, that's it.
But the Prairies, yeah, Edmonton held a very successful 78 Commonwealth Games, and within the Commonwealth
and
was
Lac
probably.
Leash.
And Lac La Biche?
And Lac La Biche.
Yeah, okay. I don't
know. Right up there in the international calendar.
Oh, got it. Yes.
The Lac La Biche Film Festival.
Exactly. It was number one on everybody's docket.
Yes.
The number one on your docket, top 10 greatest sports moments in Calgary sports history. The Flames capture Lord Stanley's mug, beating the Canadiens 4-2 Game 6, May 25th, 1989. Colin Patterson, Doug Gilmore, key goals in that one. Lanny McDonald retired after that game. You know, at that time, it was the Battle of Alberta. Edmonton had a mitt full of Stanley Cups. Calgary, mm-hmm. you know, the long-held rivalry belief that the Flames were built to beat the Oilers. And, mm-hmm. you know, finally, it had a couple of breakthroughs and then get to the Stanley Cup for the second time in, I guess, technically be 4 years, right? 86, back in 89. They win it. The only team ever to win in Famed Montreal and
win the
and
cup on the Montreal cup. Home ice.
Right.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but they didn't have to beat the Oilers that year. The Oilers got tripped up
by LA, did they not?
Yes. I believe that it was LA that year. And so the Flames didn't ever have to have that sort of.
Yeah, that's off the top of my head. I'd
big showdown series. If I remember correctly from the research on the Fuhrer book,
that
they didn't have to play them head to head, that they were eliminated early.
And over at that Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there. Over at the penalty box, Jim Poplinski and Tim Hunter, not dressed tonight, have joined Al McInnes. They've got their sweats on, and the Calgary Flames have won the Stanley Cup! We're the winners! We're the winners! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby! And the Flames coming out to celebrate out on the ice now as the Calgary Flames have won the Stanley Cup for the first time in their history. And they do it here in the Montreal Forum.
Who was that young fellow?
Oh, a very excited young man.
Three yeah babies and two.
We won.
Yeah.
We won. Yeah. That was, again, the stories of that. And you and I both do enough around the community in terms of, you know, just being at events that, you know, Lanny or Bearcat or, you know, Merzen or, you know, Patterson go to or Paplinski go to, you know, still.
Yeah.
You know, everybody reveres them. The stories are great. The, you know, the anecdotes are fantastic. And, I mean, that's what it's supposed to be about. So, there you go. Number one. So, those are your top ten.
Yes.
Will. No, put the microphone on, Will.
What, yes, sir.
What kind, you mentioned before, a little bit of response to things. And again, not nitpicking. I'm just curious about what people feel like might have been missed off that list.
Well, Bruce, going back to the chat we had in the 1 o'clock hour, this one came up again, and that, of course, is Pee Wee Smith in 1991.
Yep.
And that one is come back again as, a kind of one that's been thrown out there as to been what's should be on that list.
Yeah, maybe.
This one is not really... I don't know if I could consider this a Calgary moment. Yeah, he's a Calgary guy and he lives here, but people were talking. One guy brought up Gilmore Junio's act in Sochi, which, you know, was fantastic. But again, when you're talking about Calgary moments, I'm not really sure you can clarify that one as a Calgary moment.
Yeah.
Right?
He's a Calgarian. He's a Calgarian.
Another one says Eddie Whalen, Stampede Wrestling.
Well, that's a lifetime of moments.
Right. That's a lifetime, yeah.
There's not really a moment the guy said.
If we're going to go down that path, when Bret Hart won the world championship, Bret Hart was voted the number one sports athlete in Germany, most popular sports athlete in Germany, most popular sports athlete in India. You know, whether or not where you come down on where that fits, you know, in terms of being a product, everybody knew that Bret Hart was from Calgary.
Right.
I'm not defending you, Bruce, but this is not the definitive list. This is your list. This is intended to create these conversations.
Maybe we need to do a top 10 Calgary sports personalities of all time, and in which case, absolutely, Bret Hart would be there.
Right.
He'd be one of those guys.
Right. But I could see somebody making that case, right? I want to know, what about Don Phelps and the Calgary Canucks in 1996 that won the last ever Centennial Cup? You know, Craig Adams came off that team. I know that Eric Francis would bring that up. And the only reason I bring it up is because I love the conversation. Okay, here's 10. Those are your 10. Those are your 10. They're not, thou shalt now only refer to these 10 moving forward. Nothing else exists.
Well, I didn't grow up. Right? I wasn't marinated in the Calgary culture growing up, all those moments. And I don't know the older ones. I'm at some of them, I'm just making assumptions about them. Some of them, I've been here for and know them pretty well.
Right.
And so I'm just trying to put them in a perspective. And there's ones that mean stuff to individuals in town. But, you know,
yeah.
Bret Hart would be, that's, you know, at some point down the road, maybe we'll do a top 10 sports personalities in Calgary history. Mm-hmm. And he's certainly beyond it, because then you can broaden the brush.
Absolutely, for sure. But, you know, somebody brings up Gilmore Junio, and that is, to me, I've got a lot of time for that, because although it's not an achievement in the same way that Ken Reid becomes the first ever Canadian to win a gold medal, it is a quintessential Canadian moment, right?
Yeah.
He defines what we like to believe we are as Canadians in terms of sportsmen and everything. So when somebody says, yeah, I've got time to listen to that, you know, why don't you put together...
I can hear that argument.
Why don't you put together the top 100 now? Could you do that by tomorrow? Could you have that polished together by tomorrow?
Why don't you go and paint my house while I do that list? Because they'll both take about the same amount of time. No, listen, I appreciate those ones, and that is absolutely a terrific suggestion.
Sure.
It's not what
anything else we're missing? Somebody
would reject.
Just a couple more. One is Doug Flutie losing his shoe in the 92 Grey Cup.
Yeah.
The other one, two texters have just texted in. It's funny. They text back-to-back, and this story is on back-to-back. National championships for the Calgary Colts in 1989 and 1990.
Yeah. Yeah, that certainly is a significant moment. I don't know whether the city was enthralled with
right.
it.
And that's
I
where,
suppose that's what I'm also talking about here, is one that captured the city's.
That's absolutely right. Like,
Junio, I don't know that the city was... Once he won, they were thrilled with it, but I don't think there was a sense of anticipation for that moment.
No.
A lot of these things were
right.
the product of a long time of waiting or hoping.
A lot of these things are very personal.
Yeah.
A lot of these things are very personal. Like those people that sent in the Calgary Colts, again, from the mass audience, maybe not, but for those people, clearly they have a connection to it and they went to it. I mean, what are the things that define this city? I think part of the kind of the holding up the mirror is what do people from outside of Calgary, what would they think? What jumps off at them? And I think a lot of these have certain recognition. I'm not saying in terms of the ranking, but all of these have some sort of recognition beyond the borders of the city, right? Yeah.
And I'll tell you one more. I think of it now. And it's another Olympic athlete, but Mark Tewksbury.
Somebody just texted that in, too.
Yeah, winning, winning the gold medal. And then Mark's efforts, subsequent efforts in terms of raising the awareness for LGBT, outing himself as a gay athlete and you know, what that cost him and the emotional stuff that cost him. Yep. I mean, that would certainly be one that, you know, in retrospect, I think of that one, too.
Yep.
The final one from the text line, it's kind of a broader subject and really hard to kind of identify one moment when talking about Calgary sporting moments, but somebody says, you know, what about just the entire history and legacy of the Calgary Stampede?
Well, yeah, that's what we were saying before. I mean, but then what about the entire history and legacy of the Calgary Stampeders?
Yep.
Right? Or what about the entire... I get it. I mean, none of these are wrong. I don't think anybody's sitting here declaring them wrong. And Bruce, you and I talked about this before.
Right.
You know, there's some really good...
if your rodeo contacts can suggest a moment... I'd be happy to entertain
I would, yeah, for sure, because I mean,
just don't know it.
I was there when Lindsay Sears won the Calgary Stampede, and to me, you know, Nanton's close enough that we can include that in Calgary, or Lee Graves. You know, there's some the people that call, you know, you have the, you know, the Milan brothers from out in Cochrane.
Right.
And then you go all the way back and you think of, you know, some of the early participants. Absolutely. I don't know about.
As you say, some of the stock. Too,
well,
you
know? I mean, absolutely.
The bulls and the horses.
You know, and everybody kind of looks at you cross-eyed, but when you go into that community and that sport and you bring up those names, I believe we have one that's a statue downtown in front of our city hall, do we not? Don't we have a bull that's being honored there?
I think so.
I don't know. Yeah, so there you go. I like it. I think it's a great conversation.
You're saying there's bull at city hall?
I think there is.
Lots of bull at
city
hall.
I think there's a lot of bull in city hall. No, I like it. It's good work.
We'll discuss that with Mr. King tomorrow morning.
I will. I'll bring that up.
What's about the bull at city hall?
So what's the next one?
We did all 10.
No. Try this again. What's the next column?
Well, I would be telling, but it's going to be about Calgary next.
All right. What?
Well,
what next
then,
in Calgary?
Then what's the purpose? If I tell you now, I don't have to write it.
What's next in Calgary or?
It's about, and I'm going to be listening carefully to you tomorrow morning.
Yeah. Oh, you
Although
better be.
7 is a little early for me.
Oh, there'll be a test.
You know what? Well, of course, we're not going to be on till Lord knows what time tomorrow.
Lord knows what time tomorrow.
Maybe what we should just do is repeat your one-hour thing and they'll just take the day off.
No, because I'm going to try.
Oh, that's right.
I'm going to go try sledge hockey, and we're going to get some of the athletes on, too. So a lot to do. Congratulations, Bruce. I'm really excited that I Don't Like Mondays is coming back, and it's coming back.
I'm going to try and do some stuff.
Yeah.
No, we'll see how it goes. It could end in 2 weeks.
I
you know things around here.
I got to be honest with you. I kind of work under that assumption every single day.
Yeah.
Busy couple of 24 hours coming up. We got Blue Jays action for you tonight at 6 o'clock. The Jays are going to be back in action tomorrow at noon. We'll have that one for you as well. Well, that's going to do a couple things for us. One, we are presenting our first Sportsnet 960 Town Hall on Calgary next. That's tomorrow morning. Thanks to Ryan and thanks to Peter. They're giving Ken King a full hour. I'm going to come in. We're going to take your phone calls Ken is going to answer your questions on the Calgary Next project. That's tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock. Then tomorrow afternoon, as soon as the Jays are over, Bruce and I will be live from Winsport. The National Sledge Team has its development camp going on. Our good pal Ken Babby's the head coach. And I've been invited down to try. And we're going to hook it up, and we'll do that on the air. What bad can possibly come of that?
How will I find you, by the way? Where are you going to be? Where am I going to meet you yet tomorrow?
At Winsport.
Winsport is kind of a large place. It's like
I'll find you.
All right.
Don't you worry. I think you'll hear someone who's likely sounds like they're in pain. That'll be me trying sledge. Or someone who's terribly out of breath.
So I'll see you after you've done it.
No, we'll do it. Oh, you can come down. I'll talk to you beforehand. Only you, though. But we're doing that tomorrow.
Okay.
Later on this afternoon, Rob Volman from Hockey Abstract as well. Some special guests from the Calgary Inferno. Jenna Cunningham, one of their star players in studio in the 5 o'clock hour. They've got a big event coming up this weekend. When we come back, some headlines around the corner. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Breaking news from any sport, anytime. Sportsnet 960 is on it. On the air, online, and on Twitter. Thanks for keeping it locked on all summer long.